This is the art of discussing, where everyone is committed to having discussions with people sharing different points of view while respecting the person expressing them. We're your hosts. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kate. And we're excited that you've joined us. Let's get to this week's episode. Welcome to this episode of Art of Discussing. We have our first returning guest, super exciting. He was a guest in season one and now he's back in season three. He's our friend, Frank. I'm Kate, one of your hosts.
And I'm Ben.
And today we are talking about the January 6th, 2021 events that happened on that day at the Capitol. So do we want to talk a little bit about, Frank, do you want to get into your opinion? Or Ben, did you want to frame kind of what this is going to look like?
Well, I do want to call attention to the timeline, in-depth timeline, which we've included in the show notes for our listeners in case they want to take a look. It's just it's from the National Security Archive. I don't know if this is a .gov or an .edu website, but you'll see that in our show notes. And that kind of just pieces things together based off of three timelines, it appears, key Capitol events, White House activity, if any, and then last but not least, the Pentagon timeline, and it includes dates and times for all of those. And the reason why I say that is we're, you know, try to walk through the timeline of events. There's a lot there, but we encourage our listeners to check that out for themselves. And with that, let's just get into it.
Welcome back, right. Frank.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me. So what is it you'd like to have a conversation about?
Well, now that we are into the episode, in talking with Frank briefly before we started off the episode, I was just really, I'd like to share with our listeners that given my military background, generally how I go about looking at news events or world events is I just want the bare bones. I just want, you know, if there was a bombing or if there was a shooting or I just want that. And that's about it, right? Everything, there's a lot of color that's kind of put into it with the 24-hour news cycle of news events that happened today. And I don't really feel like I'm served well by that. So I told Frank that I'm the BBC model, right? And that's just the whether or not it persists today, you know, in the past, you just get, hey, welcome to today. Today, these things happened. All right, moving on. And, you know, nobody really wants to. There was no diving into for a half hour or 15 minutes or what have you about what they think about the event or what it could cause or what it points to. And a lot of that, if I wanted to know all that, I would seek out more about the facts of the event and hopefully put that together myself. And I also referenced my service to Afghanistan back in 2007, as you were, 2012, I was in Afghanistan, and I shared that with my mother when I was deployed, right? Like, look, I do not want you turning on TV for the news. If you do, and they say the word Afghanistan, I want you to change the channel, because I just felt like there was the likelihood that there would be undue worrying of my family by consuming that.
So. Yeah. So let me say something here, Ben. Thank you, number one, for your service. I know that you're mixed military, and I honor that. But in your conversation, what I'm struck with is that just the bullet points may not necessarily be good enough. You're telling your mom turn off the TV because of how they may couch that information, right? how that information.
Well, and that's a good point, Frank. Actually, no. I also feel like the bullet points are incorrect. So they're not reliable.
Perfect. Go ahead.
Case in point. So I remember specifically one time she didn't listen and she saw something on there, which I then looked at, right? Out there as I could. And it's really about research and it's really about fact checking. And so there was a Marine presence that was ramping up at the time. Long story short, if this is Afghanistan, this is where I was. This is where the Marine Corps was, right? But there was stuff.
And if you happening. Can't see him, he's pointing to the top of Afghanistan.
The north, right. The north of Afghanistan, near where the capital is, versus the central to, you know, southern area where the Marine Corps buildup was kind of happening. And there was an event that they wanted to report on. And when the newscaster is talking about it over their shoulder, as per usual, there's a graphic. That graphic shows Afghanistan and it has a star in the middle to depict the cap. Well, it usually depicts the capital, but right now it was depicting Bagram Air Force Base, which was where I happened to be. But what the words that were coming out of their mouth were not in reference to Bagram. It was in reference to the South. And right. But my mother watching that sees a star on a map behind the newscaster and thinks that's where they're talking about. And that's where I know my son to be. And that's an issue. And it's not an issue because I was nowhere near that. Right. Like, so for my part, that's just getting it wrong.
But that really is a good point in that we are susceptible to whatever the source of the information is. Okay, so when you talk about January 6th, you've got certain sources of information that are putting things out to say this is the way it was, but you don't know if they're leaving things out. You don't know really if the information is truly the information. So you are listening, you have a filter that you're listening through, which is whoever the news agency is that's delivering it. Whether it's CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, Fox News, you know, Newsmax, there's going to be a filter to it.
Right.
Okay. Right. So then when we get down to it, you know, what do you hear the most about what January 6th was? I'm going to answer that. You keep hearing one side saying it's an insurrection. Right.
Right.
Yeah, which is kind of what I thought was the crux. Like, so okay. You hear different terminology associated to the event.
Okay.
The events of January
6th. What is an insurrection? All right, I'll answer that. Cambridge Dictionary defines an insurrection as an organized attempt by a group of people to defeat their government and take control of their country, usually by violence. Okay.
Okay.
Now, is that what happened?
I feel like you could take that two ways. One is we don't know what their goal was or their intention internally was.
Why not?
Or no. Like, I feel like it depends on, and this is just my opinion, but I feel like it depends on how you kind of interpret.
Okay,
that.
Then let's go back. Because what the news media says is that Trump caused them to go down and take control of the government. Is that an accurate statement based upon your knowledge of what the media has said?
I definitely would agree that that is an accusation level that the president, right? That mm-hmm. he is responsible for inciting
yep.
The protesters to go down and take action.
Okay, well, take action or take control of the government?
Take action is what I would say is, and I understand that there are accusations leveled at him to do just that, you know, but for as far as I would say, I interpret what is being put out there as he is principally being accused of inciting these protesters that were present to go take action.
All right, well, let's go back. If they are saying that this is an insurrection, and if Cambridge is accurate, and I'm going to say that it's probably fairly accurate as to how they define an insurrection, sure. Then did he incite them to take control of the government? Now, that's the question. So I'm going to ask you guys a question. Have you read Trump's speech?
No.
Okay. Then it would be worthwhile for you to take a look at that. Nowhere in that speech did Trump say, go down and take control of the government. Nowhere in that speech did he incite people to do violence. In fact, what he did say is, we will go down and peacefully and, you know, protest, or peacefully, you know, make your voices be heard. We're fighting for something. We're fighting for, this democracy. His standpoint was in the speech that this was an election that was in effect rigged, or it was an inaccurate election. And he wanted to get peacefully protest, in effect, to go down and make your voices heard, to tell Congress to do the right thing. Now, you know, nowhere did he actually incite people to do that. Now, maybe there were some people down there in that group that incited other people to do something, but, you know,
or went for the purpose, like used it potentially as cover to go for the purpose of having, like, storming the Capitol. Is that another way of what you're thinking? Like, I have heard, or I have wondered, if some of the groups who actually went into the Capitol versus those who were protesting outside of it were there, because some of them look like they were in military gear. Like, I've wondered if they were really there to protest, or if they were there to do something more. And I guess the question for me is,
okay,
where did that come from?
Yeah, like, was it an organized overall attempt to do something, or was it bands of people that were pissed off enough to cause something to happen? So I'm gonna read you something else here, and this was, and you tell me if this applies to January 6th. Now, too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take the streets, persistent poisonous inequities and injustice. And please show me where it says protesters are supposed to be polite and peaceful, because I can show you that outraged citizens are what made the country what she is and led to any major milestone. To be honest, this is not a tranquil time. So my question to you is, where did that quote come from, and does it apply to January 6th?
I feel like Ben has a better chance between the two
of us. I do. I'm going to ask you to read it once more, Frank.
Sure. Now too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets, persistent, poisonous inequities and injustice. And please show me where it says protesters are supposed to be polite and peaceful, because I can show you that outraged citizens are what made the country what she is and led to any major milestone. To be honest, this is not a tranquil time.
And the question is,
does that apply to January 6th? What you would think would could have happened on January 6th?
Well, first I want to know, what's the source?
I'm not going to tell you that yet.
Hold on. Let's see. I think it does apply, at least. I would say it is applicable to January 6th. One particular part is, protests do not have to be peaceful, right? Because there are many places where protests are, all over the world, where protests are not peaceful. I've seen that firsthand. And the First Amendment rights to speech and assembly are predicated on you know, keeping order and being, I mean, they don't have to be polite. I don't, protests do not have to be polite, but to be lawful protests, they should be, I would argue that they should be peaceful.
This quote is not, you know, this quote is not saying, show me where it says protesters are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Show me where it says, right. And to that, I would point to our laws.
Okay.
Our laws.
And so anybody who violates our laws should be tossed in jail or, you know, prosecuted or whatever, you know, is that correct?
They should, at a minimum, be detained. I will not concede that they should be tossed in jail. If there is reasonable doubt that a law has been broken, people should be detained until they can ascertain what actually happened. Okay. That's what I would say.
All right. So I'm going to tell you what that quote is from.
Okay.
That quote is from CNN anchorman Chris Cuomo talking about the 2020 Antifa and BLM riots that happened in the summer.
Right.
So the same thing happened with two different results. In the summer, nobody was prosecuted. At the Capitol, everybody's bad. Throw them all in jail. Don't give them any rights. Some of those people have been sitting in there in jail for over a year with no rights. They haven't even had bail. They haven't had it, you know. So I look at this. I say there are two justices happening right now in this world, in this country. There is the one that says, you know, these people are insurrectionists, and my God, we should throw the book at them and get rid of them. And then there's the other one that says, protests are okay. You're supposed to be, you know, angry and tear down buildings and burn things and so forth. And it's okay. Or at least those people in the summer of 2020 were not prosecuted. So, I bring this up so that you will see that there is a double standard in this country when it comes to what side of the fence you're on. If you are a conservative, you are wrong. If you are a Black Lives or Antifa or liberal person, you know, that's okay. And I say what I bring that up is look from the basis of how that is, how that's affecting you, how it affects you in and how it, you know, you as a person who is you've got your political views, your views. Okay, just because my viewpoint is different than your viewpoint doesn't make it's a viewpoint.
Right.
Okay. So what I am seeing, and I think a lot of people who tend to think along the lines that I do will look at this and say, you know, there is something wrong here in the way that we are administering our laws, in the way that we are, you know, listening to what is being said. If you read Trump's speech, you will find out that you will really look at it and say, he never really said to do anything. You can imply certain things, you can think certain things, and then maybe certain people reacted and overreacted, but it wasn't Trump doing anything to cause it. He was, if you take a look at the bulk of the speech, it was that this election was rigged. When he went to bed, he had this election won. When he woke up, this election had flipped because people had votes that were counted without anybody around. You don't know where they came from. There's, you know, you can say, oh, we got all these votes. Yeah, but where'd they come from? Are they legitimate? You know, and that bodes to the whole point of we need to take control of our elections. We need to stand up and challenge. Now, let me go back another thing here. One of the things that Trump was saying is we have to challenge this election. If you hear that from the media standpoint, that's insurrectionist. You can't challenge a free election. However, every Republican president that was elected in this century, the Democrats challenged the veracity of the election in Congress. Didn't go anywhere, just like Trump's didn't go anywhere, but that was challenged. So if you consider that insurrection, and I have heard that that's considered insurrection, then every Democrat who ever challenged an election, and there's still some sitting there in Congress right now, are insurrectionists as well. I'm going to go one step further. You have heard that on from a timeline, you had certain things that happened on January 6th, okay? January 4th or January 5th before that. How often have you heard that Trump actually signed an order or a request to have 10,000 National Guard troops put in place on January 6th to keep order? Have you heard that?
I have seen that, yes.
Okay. So do you know why they weren't there?
I don't.
Okay.
I want to say the Capitol Police thought they had it.
No.
Okay.
The way that it works is that the president signs the request. Two people have to approve it. One is the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. She has gone on record and says she didn't want that to happen. And two is the mayor of Washington, D.C. She didn't approve it. Trump could not bring could not bring troops to the Capitol without their approval. Did you know that just a few days, a week or so after January 6th, the chief of the Capitol Police resigned?
Yeah, I did know that.
Okay.
That's why I thought it was potentially.
No, he told the Washington Post his request for preemptive reinforcement from the National Guard was turned down. So that is and that is overseen by the by Nancy Pelosi. So if you want to blame Trump for the, quote, insurrection, the person you should be blaming is Nancy Pelosi for failing to properly keep the peace. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Okay.
The next thing we should take a look at is now that we were able to create this whole hubbub about January 6th and this insurrection, Congress gets together and says, okay, we're going to form a bipartisan commission to take a look at what happened on January 6th and get to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. So typically what happens is there's a Republican, you know, because it's really close. The Republicans have their people and the Democrats have their people that go on and they actually do a fact finding to try and ask questions. Well, Nancy Pelosi, as the chairman, has the ability to say who's going to be on that committee. And she turned down every one of the Republican requests to have their people on the committee. And instead, she chose the two people in Congress who are anti-Trump people, Liz Cheney, and I forget the other guy. He's quitting as a congressman out of, I think it was Ohio, Illinois or something like that. Anyway, and they are just, they basically don't like Trump, and they're going to do everything they can to tear it down. Whether you like Trump or don't like Trump, there is fairness. There should be at least a fairness in how we do things. So anything that comes out of that committee is BS. Now, here's the other piece to know. The chairman of that committee has said that Nancy Pelosi and the Capitol Police Sergeant at Arms people, you know, person there, are off limits. You can't ask them any questions. What happened? Where are the notes? What was the communication? If you really want to get to the bottom of what led up to January 6th, you need to find out what the people in charge of keeping security, what were they doing? What was in their notes? What was in their communication? And we can't find out. Okay.
Okay.
So when you
know, and I would also assert, right? Like security, people who are in charge of security definitely have a responsibility to make sure that there is adequate security to address whatever might happen. And I get that. And looking at whether something is or is not an insurrection has, like, she could have had absolutely, like, anybody, not she. I'm not talking about Speaker yeah. Pelosi, but there could have been absolutely no one, to include DC Metro Police, Capitol Police, National Guard, anyone, to oppose people getting in, except for, let's just call it, locked doors. Let's say that because Congress was in session and doors were locked, the absence of that security does not make or not make an insurrection, I would argue. I would also argue that whether or not President Trump set them down to do whatever he wanted them to do, right? Gave them explicit orders or didn't give them explicit orders. That is not also, you know, sure, that points to or doesn't point to his involvement in such an event. And it doesn't say that the event itself is not, doesn't fall into a category of being looked at like that, right? So it's organized. An unorganized event would look like people just storming the Capitol building for the purpose of taking it over for whatever reason, right? It wasn't like that, right? Like,
what do you mean it wasn't like that?
It wasn't just citizens in their homes or hearing something that they didn't like happening on TV, leaving those homes, getting in cars, driving down to the same place, getting out of those cars and rushing up the steps of the Capitol to take over. That's arguably unorganized, right? The presence of a protest, that the protest itself was organized, right? The protest is organized. And this is just how I'm like saying, if, and I'll pull it up again because you said it was from Cambridge, right? An organized attempt by a group of people to defeat their government and take control of their country, usually by violence. And the two, you're talking about two different, that quote that you read was definitely from another time, but this time is, I don't think it's irrelevant that the nature of the discussion here, whether it be stop the steal, whether it be oversight of the political process that was going in on at the time. And there were people who were not party to that in the citizenry that had organized, appeared in the area, and now at this point are trying to gain access to a federal government, actually the federal building, right? That's the seat of government where both houses are. It could be looked at as a coincidence, but both houses were in the same building at the same time. And how often does that happen? Is a question I would ask, right? Like, so for them to get in there, and I don't know, Ben Hobbs does not know why those people were trying to gain access to the building. And if they were to get into the building so that they could watch everything that as it unfolded and as it happened and not intervene, sure, that I would say does not fit the definition of an insurrection. But if in any way they tried to change, because at that time, that was the time where we were looking at the next leader would be this or the next leader would be that. And arguably the leader influences control of the country, right? If they tried to change that in any way, shape, or form, it would constitute, in Ben Hobbs' opinion, an organized attempt by a group of people, in this case, as usually by violence, sure, I would sprinkle a little violence on there, to defeat their government. That is hazy.
It but is.
Take control of their country. That is not hazy.
Are you saying that you think that they tried to take control of the country?
I think that if you try to influence one, like who the president of the United States is at one point in time like that, then yes, if it's your guy, then you've kept control of the country. And if you make it the other guy, then that guy now has control of the country. And okay. And if you've used violence and you are physically occupying So that's one, right? Because that's one branch of government.
Yeah, but the executive hold on a second, because what you're really saying is that they were going to go in and change all laws so that they could maintain control of the government, so they could have the government be the way they wanted it to be, as opposed to influence. You know, there's a difference. It could be influence, and then it got out of hand. It could be, you know, let me. You're a military guy, okay? What would you say the key is to holding control
of
you're attacking Congress. You want to get control of it.
Yes.
What do you need to do that?
In order to take control, take over the Congress, either A, you're going to.
This insurrection, you want to overthrow the government.
Purely militarily, I would say you would need to take over institutions, and you would need to occupy them, right? Yeah. It's not just taking them. You would have to stay there and occupy them.
So in order to stay there and occupy them, wouldn't you need some power behind you? Wouldn't you need some force to be able to show that you could hold on to that power, that you could hold on to that facility?
I would say yes. And no, to make it an attempt. If you did not, if you tried to do that and didn't, then that was an attempt. If you do that, then it is. I would concede, right, that you would likely need something to hold the power. But here's the thing. And naturally, this part makes me uncomfortable. I don't want anybody to. So not having designs on actually the logistics of this, if the people in charge were in the building and you were able to enter the building and take control of the people in charge, then you would not necessarily need, I don't know what you're alluding to, but you wouldn't need external forces like tanks or aircraft, or like traditionally military speaking, if when you entered and took control of people and those people were in charge, effectively you have taken charge. Unless there is a mechanism in place to have, when such an event happens, control automatically move somewhere else.
Yeah, okay. We're talking hypothetical on a lot of stuff.
We are talking hypothetical.
Big time. But the key thing that I look at is at what point does a protest become an insurrection? And I don't think it met the FBI has said, I saw this on MSN, the FBI has said that wasn't an insurrection. It wasn't an organized attempt. The FBI said it. So, it's like, so why is media, and why is the Democratic Congress still saying it was an insurrection, when our chief investigative agency is saying it is not? It's BS. This is BS. We're all being played here. Because it doesn't fit the norm of what they want to get across. So they have got to show us that it was an insurrection to get control of who we are and what we're doing. I'm telling you, that's, now we're getting into, little green men and conspiracy theories and so forth. But the fact is, if you really have power, the power that is being exhibited is really on the behalf of the the Democratic Congress people and leadership who are basically telling us what we can and cannot do, what we do, what we have to believe and can't believe, what is, and it goes back to COVID, what is disinformation and not disinformation. It's like this is what you can say on social media, and social media stamps whatever CDC and whatever the government says is disinformation, and they'd throw away anything that doesn't fit the norm. You take a look at what's going on right now. If you really look at it, that's what's going on. And it's not that in the country with regard to how the country is and how the populace is being played. What you can say, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate, this country.
Okay.
Now it's not that far removed from what Putin is doing in the Soviet Union by saying.
Say that again.
It's not.
I just want to say
that it's not that far away from what Putin is doing. The thing that is missing is in Russia. What it's missing is that Putin can throw you in jail for 15 years, but you can't get thrown in jail for 15 years. But you do get canceled. You basically lose your liberty.
And it is. Russia doesn't purport to have a freedom of speech.
But we apparently don't either.
Okay. So wait, I want to understand this. So you're saying we don't because you're saying we don't have a freedom of speech. And is that because it was freedom of speech for those protesters? Then they were thrown in jail.
They had the right to go ahead and yell and scream and make noise and whatever. They didn't have the right to break in. So for that, you know, they get their ass thrown in jail and that's fine. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, but I'm taking this and I'm expanding it. I'm expanding this whole concept. You got people who are thrown off all of the social media platforms for saying something that the CDC doesn't agree with. And then six months later, the CDC changes its mind and it's okay.
Okay.
Why can you say certain things, you know, certain things now, but you couldn't say it back then because it wasn't sanctioned by the government? That's not freedom of speech. If you really had freedom of speech, you could go, the idea is you could put up any kind of a soapbox in any kind of an arena and freely speak your mind, other than things like yelling fire in a movie theater, or talking violence. You can't go plowing through people with a car, you know, but it's,
and you're saying that you are no longer able to do that with a soapbox.
You're no longer able to do that with a soapbox because a soapbox is taking a lot of different mechanisms. Soapbox is now Facebook, soapbox is Twitter.
But wait a minute. If you take my soapbox, if you take my carton, right, and go out there, I can accuse you of stealing my carton, right? Because a difference that I see in what you're describing is, you can still take your soapbox out to the street or the corner and do that, but you can't get on like Facebook. We assume, and we do talk about this a lot, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those are owned by companies.
And I got
they can
that.
Do what they can do with those things.
Yeah.
So it's not a, is so it an it's, encroachment is it, on your freedom of speech?
Well, there's an interesting debate that is going to happen. And that is Section 230 on the communications, whatever that, you know, that puts them as their own separate company, as opposed to a newspaper or something like that. I mean, that's, they're in a totally different classification. The fact that you can be canceled as a culture by saying something, and that people can then attack you for just saying something, and they agree that you no longer should have the right to even work, because you said something or you were associated with somebody. You know, people have lost their jobs because they were associated with somebody who said something that wasn't approved. You know, this is the kind of thing, as a slippery slope. This is the kind of thing that we're heading down, and it's the same thing that I brought up at the beginning. If you're on the right side of the fence, you ought to be in jail. If you're on the left side of the fence, anything goes.
Okay. And usually conservative viewpoints side with law, order, that sort of thing. My question is, so whatever causes a company to change, like to a company, companies are canceling these people. It does not, I'm not seeing anything that has their freedom of speech being pinched.
Okay, so then, I will, I don't have anything right in front of me right now. But I can, these are things that I have seen, have heard, have saw people that have lost their jobs because they were associated with people who were canceled. If you are a teacher, all right, if you're a teacher and you don't abide by what what is going on in the school districts now, or parents, parents come and talk at a school board meeting in Virginia. They come and talk at a school board meeting because they don't like what is happening with their children's education.
Right.
And the Attorney General of the United States is investigating those people as terrorists. Because you cannot speak up and say, you know, take an opposite viewpoint of what the school board wants. They're actually actively looking at them as terrorists. Check that one out, because that is happening.
And I just want to ask, because I don't have that article, right? I just want to ask, and we're sure that it wasn't something specific that they said, i.e., if I'm going to take my kid out of here and burn down the school district.
No.
Something.
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay. I will find that. But anyway, that's okay. Right now.
I would say inflammatory, right? Like
it truly is.
Given that that happened. But my thing is, I understand that people are saying things that are not popular and they have a right to say them. And just because they have the right to say them does not then mean that there aren't consequences that may or may not happen that the government is not controlling.
Say that again.
Some people are expressing their viewpoints because they have the right to say those viewpoints. And then because they've expressed their viewpoints, I would assert that there are consequences that suffer and a sequence of events that has a negative impact on their life. And aside from the government's intervention, right? Aside from I stand up and I say something inflammatory, like racially charged, and I have racially charged statement. And then
specifically, what is happening is parents were talking. This is about the COVID masks and so forth. And parents were specifically talking about the being angry at the school board for forcing masks and forcing, you know, and not putting in and not having in-person teaching and so forth. And what is actually happening is that the Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, has directed the FBI to investigate these speaking as being possible threats against school board officials. And to investigate the parents as being terrorists for basically saying that we don't want you to force our kids to wear masks. So it is, you know, I take a look at this, because there are seeds of what is happening here, that the government is overreaching in their ability to call something terrorism, or their ability to call something that needs to be investigated, you know. And parents, of all things, you know, I mean, this is it was in Virginia, was one, and they're using the Patriot Act as as something, when parents are standing up for their children, and you cannot effectively do that because school boards know best. It comes from an area of the government knows best, and you don't.
Okay. I do have a question about that. So it's excellent, right? This whole, our whole season, we've been talking about statecraft and the purview, the actions of government. What in all of this, what's your thought of the role of government in a society? Any society?
I tend to be more libertarian in this,
right?
If liberty is the state of being free within a society, free from oppressive restrictions imposed by authorities on one's way of life, behavior, or political views. That's liberty. This country was founded on the basis of liberty, that you could be, you know, live free or die kind of a thing. Now, that obviously there's a conversation that happens that says we have laws that say you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That there are some things that hold that up. But if you take a look at it, I guess what I'm saying is that I stand for people being free to express themselves and explore their surroundings within society without oppressive restrictions imposed by authority on one's way of life, behavior, or political views.
And that,
to the extent that one cannot do that, then there's a loss of freedom, liberty, and self-expression. And so what government needs to do is, number one, protect from the outside, make sure that nobody comes in and infringes what's going on inside the country. Number two,
Why?
Because in other words, a strong defense. So okay. That you can maintain, you know, number two, you know, protect your borders and maintain a defense and so forth. And number two, that you have created an environment where people are free to populate, to live their life, to do commerce, to, you know, and to have a more minimalist amount of laws that restrict it. Let the states manage how communities react, because every state is different.
Well, but I'm also talking about, so when we say government, what is the role of government in society? Right.
Yeah.
States have governments.
Yeah.
The county has governments. Right. We're not talking on a federal level.
Okay.
So far, I've heard protect the outside, the citizenry from the outside. That's one. Right. Mm-hmm. What's another role of the government?
Well, I think government needs to promote commerce within the society and allow the people to kind of decide how they want to govern themselves. You know, this is a community based, we're a bunch of community based organizations. We create rules and ways that we want to react. And we have been doing it through for the last couple hundred plus years. We have been managing how we interact with each other. But what's happening, I think, in the last few years is we're seeing a much more top down control of this is the way we know that it should be done, and we're taking away citizens' rights to govern themselves, not do whatever they want, but to govern themselves, to have conversations amongst themselves that says this is our community and this is what we want to do. And then that community meets up with other communities, and you all get together and you form a state, and you say this is how we as a state want to do. And then you work together, you have conversations. That is not what's happening right now. Right now, we've got top down, not bottom up. Bottom up government is what we need, not top-down government.
Okay.
And it's a dance.
Right. And I think it illustrates, like, we still haven't really talked about the role of such a government, right? Like, is it the role, what is the role of the government? It's to provide for, it's to make sure, I hear that it's to make sure the people that it is in charge of are safe from people outside of the society. That's really, that's one. And I'm sure that there's other roles or whatever. And what that looks like, I'm sure is different. But we talk a lot about
Okay. All right. Let me read something to you.
Okay.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Outstanding. Okay.
That is what government does.
Well, I mean, it's clear that that's what they want our government to do, right? The role of the government.
Well, that is what we have agreed to as citizens of this country, that is what we're standing for.
Right.
Where it gets tricky is how we actually practice that.
Yeah. And if there's too much control at the top, then it's not allowing the citizens to basically govern themselves.
Now, and hold on though. So I don't know. I want to be clear to all our listeners out there that, by the way, to take a little step back, I'm sure most, if not all of you have heard that preamble that he just spoke. If you're not familiar as to where it comes from, it's the preamble of the United States Constitution.
Yeah, those right? of you who are educated by public education, you probably haven't heard that before.
Actually, I was educated.
Those of you under 40.
I am largely educated by public.
Yeah, I know.
So that's what that is, right? And in there, what I was asking before, like, what are the roles of the government? And Frank with deftness sourced the preamble of the Constitution, which attempts to, talk about what the U.S. government will choose as its roles, right?
It doesn't attempt, it actually states it.
Okay. Amongst which is, one of those was ensure domestic tranquility, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Promote the general welfare. Those in the preamble, right? If there is a sickness that could affect most of the country, and I get it before I say it, that not everyone's going to agree with how we do this, but it's them attempting, an imperfect attempt, to provide for the general welfare, to provide for the domestic tranquility. If someone is saying, you know what, and I didn't read the article that you have about, parents at a school board. And I would argue that if they're talking about a public school that lots of people have access to, and the parent's stance are, you're not in charge of me, I'm going to send my kid to school without masks, then I think that would go against, right, the common good sort of thing. For there, I get it. I understand they can believe what they want. And our government, one of the roles, has a duty to at least investigate, hey, is this affecting the health of other students?
Got that. So just take one more step here. And that is, we don't know. I can't specifically state the details of that. Of that school board and so forth, but I've seen enough of that stuff happening that I know something's out there. But I think, and I want to talk big picture again. What we are not doing is we are not holding conversations open and honest, trying to understand what works or what doesn't work. What we are getting are dictates from top down, without you know, without really a good conversation that says this is why I believe this way, this is why I believe that. So doctors go back in this case, doctors who have said, you know, herd immunity, doctors who have said, you know, we should do this, you know, this way and so forth, we're have been completely shut down by the CDC and the governments and so forth without even having a conversation out in the open so people can make decisions for themselves. And we can have a way of looking at it that makes sense, and come to some kind of conclusion. We're being fed. This is the way it's got to be. Now, I understand in a pandemic situation, you know, somebody had to make some changes and had to take a look at it. But, you know, we haven't been very quick to look at the other possibilities. People grab onto a a conclusion and find the facts that justify the conclusion, as opposed to trying to find what works and be open to that. I am totally amazed. As you know, I go between Texas and California. When I go to Texas, there's absolutely no mask, hasn't been masked for a year or whatever. I mean, you know, and people aren't getting sick in Texas. Come back and you're all locked up in California. Why? How come people in Texas aren't dying left and right if it's so bad? You know, it works in Florida. It works in Texas. Didn't work in, you know, but California says, no, it can't be that way. New York says, no, it can't be that way. Something, there's an incongruity in what is happening, and people aren't willing to look at and really be open to what's incongruous. And so what is really happening is that we have a lack of conversation. And when we shut down people, when we immediately say, and you know, that you should be banned from Twitter because you said certain things, because it's disinformation. Is it? Are we really looking at it? Twitter's making a judgment saying, I don't want this on my site. But are they, you know, are they practicing disinformation in banning people who've got other information?
And is it not Twitter's right to do so, as that's its product?
Well, it depends. If what they did affects the livelihood of someone else, then could they be, you know, if they're there to shut somebody's livelihood down, could they be liable for that?
Livelihood
somebody, take a guy like Alex Berenson, for instance. He's a writer. He's, you know, he studies, he looks at things, he's got opinions, he puts things out, you know, and Twitter banned him for putting out what the CDC said.
Okay,
that's one of the things that they banned him for. He's suing the crap out of him now.
I get it.
You know, so, you know, because in effect, they shut down his ability to monetize what, you know, his.
Did they, though? They shut down his ability to monetize
through them
on their platform.
I got that. I got that because it didn't correspond with what they believed. So do they have the right maybe to do that? Maybe they have the right to do that. And there are too many different rules, regulations. I can't get into it because I'm out of my depth, you know, in this, but I question it. I question, can we have a conversation about why this has to be and have a communal conversation? And we're not doing that. It's like it feels like this is a feel like this is a, you know, gut reaction that the Facebook Twitters of this world are banding together and following the edicts of what some group in Washington wants them to say and follow because it fits the narrative.
Okay.
And the question is, does it? I don't know. Is that what's really going on? I don't know. It feels like it. And we can't get a conversation started to say why.
Well, and I'd say we haven't gotten a conversation started to say why. I get that. One that's been, you know, effective. We definitely haven't. And I wouldn't say that we can't, right? Because freedom of speech wise, I mean, who knows? This conversation that we are having right now could be enough to have that, you know, propagate. And maybe possibly. It doesn't. But I don't. I think it's strong to say we can't have this conversation. We can. We just haven't yet.
Okay.
Is what
there,
I is,
there's
is,
there's is nothing there's nothing compelling people to be able to do that. There's no, you know. So yes, you're right. It hasn't happened. I'll you know, it may happen. Also, who knows?
Also, in the same vein, right? Like, this is what I see. I see your defense of the President Trump and his involvement with the alleged insurrection. Your defense of President Trump in that is just the other side of the coin to then your attack on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, let's just call them the media, the social media sites that can kick people off. It's not like they're saying, right? It's not like either one of them has explicitly said, I think what you're saying is wrong, or I think what you're saying is this, or I think they just like President Trump didn't tell the people out there in support of him to do anything, but by just not allowing this person or that person, Twitter or the social media accounts, by taking them off, it's just they're expressing viewpoints that are not consistent with this company, right? Assuming, and I have zero idea how they're structured, but assuming they have a CEO who, that's his call. Is it any less his right to say, kick them off because it's inconsistent with the values I have of Twitter? Well, what are the values of Twitter? Maybe nobody knows them. Maybe he just has them in his heart, right? I don't know. But I am saying that that is no different than the president talking to his supporters and strongly alluding at anything and then blaming what happens after that on him. He didn't explicitly say anything. No one was given orders to go do anything. Just like so-and-so is kicked off of this platform for some reason.
Okay, so just from a political standpoint,
right?
All right, what happened from January 6th and what has happened, you know, has basically been a cancellation of Trump.
I could see how some people would say it that way. Sure.
Well, I mean, he's basically been canceled by media and Twitter and, you know, Facebook, and I mean, they've said you're an insurrectionist. You did these things.
Okay.
Okay.
And they have a right to think that, right?
That's fine. What I'm saying is, in this cancel culture, and this goes to fairness, and I'm not defending Trump. I'm just stating this is, if you take a look at his speech, he never said anything in particular, that he's being alleged to say. However, okay. The thing that I want you to take a look at, those people who have been, quote, canceled by media, by a certain, you know, by the people who end up canceling people, you don't see right-wing people canceling left-wing people. You see cancellations only one way. If you don't agree with the left, you're canceled. We gang up on you. We beat the crap out of you.
Oh.
Figuratively?
Figuratively. Yeah. Figuratively. Okay. I'm just saying, what cancellation is, you know, you're nothing anymore. You're okay. Off to the side.
All right.
Take a look at it. And there's a certain unfairness that is propagating throughout this country. And if you take a look at what's going on with regard to Republican and Democrat and what people think and what people don't think, you know, the people who are more conservative are the ones in danger of being canceled they're more susceptible.
Okay.
And so there is a distinct unfairness. So when you take a look at where the Republican Party is going and where the elite left is going, you're going to find out that more people who are just normal everyday people, you know, if they don't toe the line, they will have the possibility of being canceled. So anyway, I think Kate had asked me at one point, you know, where, you know, is there a fraction in the Republican Party? And I kind of see that what's happening is, and this was before this, but I kind of see that there's really not a fraction. There's a minority of Republican Party people who don't like the fact that the party has left them. But I think you're seeing much more people in the mainstream, people who are working class people who raise kids, people who are, you know, who've got families and so forth. They're now taking a look and saying something is not right. And I think you're seeing more, you could very well see more of a fracture in the Democratic Party as people move with their votes and with their money and so forth, more towards, I'm going to protect my family. I'm going to protect my kids. I'm going to, you know, I've got a job to do. And, you know, the left and the elite left and the, you know, is moving the opposite direction, but that's another story for another time. But
okay. All right. But let me ask you this. I have a question. Kate, do you have a question by any chance?
I do, but ask yours first.
Okay. So my question is canceled. We talked a lot about being in danger of being canceled and, you know, canceled. What danger is there, if any, is there in being canceled?
All right. Danger is a story. It is what is there is just that your ability to reach out to the places that you have been to before, meet and be with people that you before and express your opinions as you have in the past is now looked at as you're now unable to do that because those things that were available to you before are no longer available to you. You know, and I don't know, I haven't been canceled, so I don't know what all the effects are. I just know that people have said that what I have read is that they are now blacklisted, you know, the old blacklisted type of thing. You know, I mean, that's back in the day, right? You know,
okay,
that's back in the 30s or 40s or I don't know what, whenever that term was used.
Right. And so here, and
you're not in good standing with the people in power.
I get that.
I think you would.
And there is, but it doesn't, it influences your ability to prosper. And I would argue that it may not be so influential on your ability to survive.
I grant it, you can survive, you can live, you know, but there's a liberty. You go back to liberty. There's a way of, you know, if you being free within a society to away from oppressive restrictions imposed by authority. An authority could be Twitter, because in effect they have, you know, if you can't use that service, you know, they have a certain power.
Say more about that. Like, well, I want to understand, right? Like, I get that Twitter is influential. What I don't get is that Twitter has power, because you just said oppressive and used authority.
If you no longer have the ability to communicate to people that you normally communicate to because someone has turned off the spigot.
But does being off of Twitter fit that bill?
Yeah, sure. Because
you can't get those people's emails.
You cannot express yourself
like that.
You know, like someone has determined you don't fit. Okay, someone has determined that you don't fit the requirements that other people in your circle do. Okay, so there is Ben. You're a man of color.
I am.
Okay. There were times when you were canceled.
Yes.
Your ex or your parents or, you know, whatever, right? It's that, mm-hmm. And so it's that oppressiveness.
The difference being the oppression and the authority that we are talking about stem from either A, state governments, B, the United States government, and not an independent, well, I will also say, and companies. So not only would Twitter, Instagram, Facebook be oppressing me, but also Alabama, California, Texas, and the DOJ, the Department of Defense, the, you know, all of them, all of
it's,
them.
It's happening.
It's happening.
You tell, you know, that's what's going on when CDC says something and you no longer can speak your mind because you know, you are now not in guidelines that they say that, you know, that the Attorney General is now investigating you as a terrorist because you spoke your mind at a school board meeting.
Well,
take a look at this. I'm not saying we're there where you were or your family or whatever, but I'm saying take a look. Because you know, I believe the possibility is there. We may not be there, but that there's a tremendous chance that loss of liberty, you know, could be to a whole lot of people.
Okay. And that's an interesting way to look at it. I would say for sure. Let's continue thinking on that. And let's have, because it seems like the oppressive entity that we're sort of discussing is conservative thought, right? The conservative base, people that are sympathetic to conservatism. All right, so the majority, let's now look at the events of January 6th through the prism of, let's say, right, that African Americans have kind of had enough, and that was us instead of a conservative base. Is there anything that's would be happening to, you know, any, is there anything that you would say would happen, A, happen different, or B, would it be any less offensive?
What do you mean by, okay, what do you mean by less offensive and, or?
So I assume that most, by labeling the events of January 6th as an insurrection, right, really feel like the country was in dire straits, was in danger, was in of having, you know, an organized group defeat their government, take control of their country by violence. So given that, if we change out that organized group from conservatives to the Million Man March, let's say they ended up on the steps of the Capitol. Also, for the listeners who are not familiar with what the Million Man March was, it was a gathering of African Americans in the mid-90s. I feel like mid-90s, late 90s. Anyway.
I don't know. I'm old. I forget all this stuff.
What, right? Like, so a lot of people are standing behind, okay, so that's not an insurrection, right?
Okay, let me give you a point then.
Sure.
Summer of 2020, right? Right. With George Floyd, right? And we had riots in the streets, and we had, you know, we had burning buildings. We had Antifa going after federal buildings in Portland and another city. I know Seattle. They went after city buildings and police stations and so forth. Okay, so now that was in effect violent protests, and nothing came of it.
Okay.
So those protests, you know, were acceptable.
Now, are we saying, you say nothing came of it?
From what I can tell, that with the number of people that were involved across as many locations as it happened, there have not been any significant, at least that I have heard of, anybody going to jail, to prison. You know, people would get out and you know, get out of bail, and they wouldn't prosecute. You know,
are you sure?
No, because I haven't heard of anybody being prosecuted.
So allow me to offer,
sure,
another perspective of that, right? Especially, and I don't know. I want to start by saying I also don't know, whether.
I just Googled. So for Portland, Antifa I didn't read the actual headline or the actual thing, but New York Post, June 6, 2021, more than two dozen Antifa rioters charged for a Portland mayhem. I don't know yet if they've actually gone through with prosecuting, but right. There were arrests.
I think they dropped charges.
So now here's another perspective. Is the reason possibly why you haven't heard about those arrests, those, let's say, whether they were indicted, whether they weren't indicted, but the reason why you've heard so much about January 6th and not a lot about those arrests that I would assert are being people have been detained, people have been is twofold. One, which I also believe is cannot be discounted as being insignificant, is location, right? None of those riots, fortunately, took place on the seat of government of the United States of America. Not like in the area, AKA Washington, DC, but specifically on those institutions while they were doing one of those governmental things, right? So that's one.
Yeah,
that's
I'll
one.
Go, I'll second, grant that. Mm-hmm.
The second thing is because of a largely still prevailing view that one was the natural order of things and the other defies the natural order of things.
Whoa, what's natural order?
Well, and this is, again, not knowing anything about anybody that was detained at any of those race riots, but it was a riot about race, which some, right, the natural order of things is that it's not really a problem, kind of a, like, why are we still talking about this?
What's not a problem? What's not a problem?
The issue of race in our country, right? Like, this is, you know, if people are burning stuff down, over race, and for our listeners, for the purpose of my speculation, I'm just going to assume that everybody was detained, and I understand that this is likely not the case. Everybody that was detained were people of color, people, let's go ahead and say, caught doing stuff, right? Let's say everybody in those race riots that are in custody, let's concede that they will be not let go, that they will be convicted and for however amount of time, right? And that they were all of people of color. And that, because I'll keep going, right? And that everybody at the steps of the events of January 6th were all conservative leaning, not people of color. And as we also like to hear a lot, hardworking, working class Americans, right? So I would just go so far as to say, one is the natural order of things, right? When, yeah, you arrest those people that have, you know, are causing disturbance over, you know, stuff that's not important, and they get arrested and they go to jail. But hardworking working class citizens who are trying to affect change by taking active participation in what their government says and does, and they're being downtrodden and they don't want to take that anymore, that to arrest those people is, I mean, it's beyond ludicrous. It indicates the beginning of a fascist state. Like, that's too much government control. Like, let's talk about this. Why would we lock those people up? And that, I'm not saying that that's actually what happened. And I'm saying from a certain perspective, it makes sense.
Okay. What makes sense to me is that one of the things that and this is from what I've seen, it doesn't fit the narrative. The narrative of the media and the prevalent being basically the mainstream media who are controlling these things. What makes the most sense, and again, I agree with you on the first point. What makes the most sense, though, is that if it was a right wing you know, if since it's a right wing, something that they can associate with the right wing, they can call it that way, and they can, you know, you're on the right side of the fence, so you get blasted. People on the left side of the fence get much more of a free pass. That's the narrative that I'm talking about.
And in keeping with that same utilization of imagery, right? If all those, if the January 6th event people looked just a little different, they would have been literally blasted and not figuratively blasted.
I don't know. Because it didn't happen. So I'm not going to, you know, why wouldn't it look like, oh my God, we cannot, taking the thing, the what happened in 2020, oh, you know, we this race, we did something terrible. We got to apologize. We got, you know, we've got to, you know, we did, you know, we have to take a look at ourselves. Yeah, this happened, you know, so it may not be what you're saying. It may be entirely the opposite.
Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't know, you know, and I'm posturing, I'm putting that out there for people to listen to and to look at and to really, you know, delve into what are you hearing out there? You know, if things tend to be a certain way in the media and we listen from that filter, that's what we get. So people decry what happens in Fox News or some of the other conservative, you know, more conservative news outlets. You know, and they say that it can't be good information, you know, but it's information, and it's what happened. And you look at it from both sides, and, you know, something is not right here. And that, I think, is the takeaway that we need to look at. You know, we really need to look at it, not just accept what we're being told by Congress. And, you know, about the January 6th commission and so forth, you know, there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. And, you know, there are, I don't know how many minutes of video that was taken, and then the FBI is not releasing it so people can see for themselves and make their own mind, you know, there, you know, so we only get, and that's what's how this started out. We only get what we are told, what information is being disseminated to us. You're not looking at what's behind the scenes. And there are people who are doing good investigative work, but they haven't really been able to get their message across of what they have found because they don't have the outlet. They don't have the bandwidth. They don't have they're doing it on outlets like Fox or Newsmax or something like that, because MSNBC, CNN, CBS, ABC, they won't touch it. New York Times, they won't touch it because it doesn't fit the narrative. Keep that in mind going forward. See what the narrative is that they're trying to point across. And, you know, there are things where I'll occasionally look at CNN and MSNBC and so forth, and stuff that I see that is like, oh my God, why isn't this out there? It's not out there because it doesn't fit the narrative. So look at the narrative. You know, don't just believe what you're being told, because basically you're being shoved a crock of whatever. And that's my take out of 70 years worth of being on this earth.
Okay. Okay.
I look pretty good for 70, don't I?
Indeed.
Of course, I'm not quite 70, almost 70.
I did, but it would take us down another rabbit hole.
And we're really good at going down rabbit holes.
Okay, so if you guys have time, let's go for it. So one of the things that, going back to President Trump, one of the things that I'd be interested in hearing about inside of what you're talking about is, you had mentioned that the people who are on the commission are those couple of Republicans who didn't, you know, who don't like Trump or, you know, disagree with him.
Yeah.
And
Kinzinger, that's the other guy. Kinzinger. Okay.
And, you know, we have spoken to somebody who talks about like a fracturing in the party, which is why I asked you that question around Republican Party. It could happen to Democratic Party, et cetera. And I'm curious, inside of President Trump's influence, and back to your point of media, like you hear a lot of us, not as much anymore, but when he was president and shortly after, about like Trump followers, quote unquote. Would you agree that there is kind of a Trump followers, not Trump followers in the party, the Republican Party? Or would you, would you say that that's not a thing, that there might be a couple of, staunch old school Republicans, and now most of the party has gone towards, Trump? Is it a bad rap? Like, I'm curious your thoughts inside of that.
I think that people are looking for a conclusion where there may not be there. I think when you take a look at that, there are a lot of opinions. How many people are there in this country and everybody's got an opinion? So when you take a look at it, do Trump followers walk lockstep with Trump? No. Okay. Do I wish Trump was president now? Absolutely, because the guy that's in there now is doing a terrible job. Would I vote for Trump again? Maybe. I've got other people I like maybe even better. Am I fracturing the party? No. Do I really care about the party? No. Do I donate to the party? No. but I'm aligned with the thought processes and the beliefs of the people, the majority of people who believe in the conservative, more conservative values. Does everyone like Hillary Clinton? No. Does everybody like Bernie Sanders? No. Does everybody like AOC? No. Will they all vote for whoever is put up as the presidential contender? Yes, because they walk, because they are, they think more along those lines. So, I think people are trying to write books to talk about what is really going on in the Republican Party. I don't see it. I think there are people, I went to a speech way back. This is in 80, about early 80s. I was at a presentation in Washington, D.C., and the guy was talking about Reagan, and Reagan, he got up and he described Reagan as being, just imagine a bunch of birds in formation, and Reagan's flying, and he's the lone bird flying down the path, and then all of a sudden he looks around, and then all the birds are behind him. He's been flying the same path all this time, and the flock came to him. So it's a matter of who you assign to the flock. Trump was out there and he was speaking things that all of a sudden the flock came and said, I like what he's saying. Now, are we Trump acolytes and followers and walk lockstep? No, but I like what he was saying more than I like what Hillary was saying. That's kind of the way things work. Enough people vote for somebody because they like what the person is saying, and then then the rest of the people have got to decide, do I like this person or that person? That's just the way we are. I don't see it as being, a party that is fractured.
The reason why I ask that is because with regards to January 6th, I know I heard a lot about, it was all the Trump supporters or all the Trump followers, right? And so I guess that goes back to my question inside of, originally, like, how do we know that? You know what I mean? Just like, were the people who were storming because my understanding is there was a lot of people who were protesting peacefully, not going into the Capitol.
Yeah.
So, I'm just curious to see, like, were those people storming the Capitol, storming it for, and I asked this question earlier rhetorically, but like storming it for their own purpose, or their own like ideology, or is that considered Trump followers, right? So that was why I was asking inside of that conversation and how I don't want to say categorized, but how I've heard that the protest described.
Okay. Have you seen how easy it is to label people?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So people want to label people as quote Trump followers. They're all bad. You know, they're all Trump followers. You voted for Trump, you're this way. You know, you start believing something is a certain way, you know, and it is this or it is that, then you're biting off superstitions and myths. You know, you're now just absorbing all kinds of, you've given this thing that it has to be a certain way. No, you know, you can have somebody else that runs in 2024, well, you know, may even be Trump. Who knows? Doesn't look like it. I don't, you know, part of me wishes he doesn't run, you know, because there's a whole lot of baggage there. But I wouldn't say I'm a Trump follower, but if he runs, I'll vote for him. I'm just letting you know, that's just the way, because we would be a hell of a lot better today if he was president than what we are, where we are right now. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, so you got to take a look at how are people labeling people? And if you get the right marketing effort, like Goebbels I think it was from Hitler's time, Goebbels, you know, basically said, you can tell the people anything. If you tell it enough times, they'll believe it. You know, so there's mind manipulation that's going on out there. And I guess my whole point here is look beyond the curtain, you know, look to see who's manipulating the great Oz, because, you know, you'll find that it's a little man in a, you know, weathered suit. You know, it's not the great Oz. So really every human being, every American needs to make their own mind up, needs to research and look at it. And the educational system that we have right now, when you don't even know who the first president of this country was, you know, I'll do something I've seen on Fox, a guy named Jesse Waters, you know, that, he goes out on the man on the street, starts asking people questions, you know, who was the first president of the United States? Do you know who this guy is? And it's a picture of Joe Biden. No, the education system of this country is so shoddy that it is not teaching people what it means to be an American, what it means to live in this country, what it means, you know, what this existence really is like. It's almost like, oh, I want to go out and play, you know, TikTok or run TikTok videos. And that's all they care about. The essence of who we are as Americans are being lost. Because we are not as individuals taking the time to research and make our own decisions to say what's right and what's wrong. The best thing that's happening right now with the out of the pandemic is that parents are now seeing what's going on in schools and they're questioning it. Before, they never questioned it. You never knew what was being taught. Now that they're seeing what's being taught and they're saying, why are you doing this? And school districts don't like it. It's like the guy who ran for Jerry McAuliffe, who ran for governor in Virginia, when it's asked, you know, should parents have a right as to what's being taught to their children? He said, no. What do you mean? No. Parents' right is to the parents' obligation is to bring their kids up. It's not the state's obligation to teach the kid. It's the parents' obligation to make sure that their kids are brought up and, you know, and taught properly. And so, you know, when that happens, and he lost predominantly because the parents stood up and said, this is my kid. This is my responsibility. It's a personal responsibility I'm taking. What we as Americans have to do is take that personal responsibility in every aspect of our lives, start questioning what's being done, and find the truth that matters to us, make our decisions. And then, Ben, the community will decide how it wants to govern itself. And then the city will decide how it wants to govern itself. And then the state will decide how it wants to govern itself. So I'm done.
Okay. All right. And a quick question, hopefully, we'll see, is as someone who looks beyond the curtain and sees who's behind the Great Oz, who is behind the Great Oz?
I have no idea because I haven't been able to dig into the curtain. I just look, I look where I can to make my own mind up to say what makes sense to me, what doesn't make sense to me. I just have a sense that people are pulling levers that I know nothing about and I don't trust it. And until I can dig in and begin to get a little bit more detail and have other people start uncovering curtains, pulling back curtains, so the more we can see. What I have a sense of is that we're hiding, we've got too many curtains out there and we're not able to get behind them to really see what's going on. You know?
Okay.
We talk about the oligarchs in Russia who are running things. There are oligarchs here that are running things. I just have that sense. We don't know who they are. There are power people who are causing things to happen. And it's up to us to try and ferret out what is real and what isn't real. And it's a personal responsibility that everyone at every American has. And, you know, and I'm glad to see that parents are beginning to take that lead now.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. That's all I got. I thought that was a great way to end on and close our episode. I would have to say that although there are many points, right, that you and I, we don't seem to see eye to eye on, that last part that you just said is every American's responsibility to look at and make up their own choice and make up their own mind. I can fervently stand behind that.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. And thanks, listeners, for joining us on this episode of Art of Discussing. Thanks. Once again, thanks, Frank, for joining us. We hope to have you back.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Follow us on social media and check out our Patreon page. Leave us a review on your listening platform if you like the podcast. If you haven't heard your viewpoint or would like to be a guest, email us at info@artofdiscussing.com.
Till next time, remember there's more sides to the story than yours. Look, listen, and learn, and keep discussing.